The phrase Denzel Washington takes over for Yul Brynner can only refer to one thing, unless someone comes up with a really interesting revival of The King and I. The Magnificent Seven got a remake in 2016, and it was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
This is the number one movie in America. My name's Sean Collier, and I'm here with the Pittsburgh-based movie podcasting answer to Turbo and Ozone. It's Robin Hitchcock.
Ozone!
And Camila Adams.
I want to see that version of The King and I.
I immediately, while we were doing the like pause for theme music, I'm like, that might be good.
It could work. I mean, I've never seen The King and I, and like in my head, it's one of those things that is so instantly problematic that you shouldn't even bother in 2020. But like, if anyone could do it, right?
Exactly. Sure. It would be a very Denzel King and I. I've seen it in bits and pieces. I don't think I've ever sat through it.
It was, I watched it a lot as a kid, and before I could appreciate it being problematic in any way. And I don't even like musicals very much, but like, I think that that's a good musical, or at least catchy. Let's put it that
Probably.
Way.
Yeah.
I did also see Anna and the King, or Anna and Her King, with Jodie Foster. It's a non-musical adaptation.
Oh.
It is not good.
I can't imagine that it would be.
Because it's now and everything is sad, let's start the episode with remembrances. Because oddly, in the week that Back to School was the current episode, the director of Back to School, Alan Metter, passed away at the age of 86. We talked about him a little bit. He was kind of a journeyman director. Back to School is definitely his biggest movie. But he did one of the police academies and Girls Just Want to Have Fun, and was, you know, a guy who had a long career and one really big hit. And unfortunately, we were very dismissive of him in the episode, which felt bad. So
it was like, the episode posted, or we recorded it 2 days after he died?
That's correct.
Yeah.
That's so spooky.
Yeah.
Yes.
Tony's trying to freak us out.
Right.
I mean,
Tone.
If we had drawn Batman and Robin next, then it would have really been weird.
But, yeah, well, who knows what's going to happen at the end of this episode?
Yeah. Yeah.
I swear to you, if something happens to Vincent D'Onofrio, I'm going to be very upset.
Absolutely not. No, he cannot. Put him in a bubble.
But rest in peace to Joel Schumacher as well. I mean, a very successful and worthy director. I don't have an opinion on him. Like, okay. I know he's involved in some crap and also in some good stuff. And I don't get a feel for him as a filmmaker.
Don't
Camila,
boys.
You need to express what you are.
I just, at this moment is when I found out that Joel Schumacher died.
Oh.
I did not know going into this.
That's why I was talking about falling down.
Okay, I was wondering, like, where is this going? Where is this coming from? And I pointed out that I loved Falling Down. I thought it was hilarious, personally, but it's also been like 1,000 years since I've seen it.
I am fascinated. Like, the when he died and people were talking on Twitter, like, I saw a lot of tweets that were like, yeah, Batman and Robin is terrible, but he made some good movies. And then in those lists, they would have Falling Down. And I was like, what? Because when I saw that movie, I did not think it was a satire. I thought it was gross. So as someone whose opinion on movies I fully respect, Camila, I am very surprised / interested that you thought it was a satire.
Yeah, I mean, when did it come out? Like in the 90s?
Early 90s, I think.
Yeah. So, you know, that's around when I saw it, like in the theater, I'm pretty sure. And 93. I wasn't even graduated from high school yet what the fuck did I know about satire at that point in time? I just thought
it was
funny.
I also saw it when I was in high school.
I just thought it was funny. I absolutely took it as such.
Oh.
Like, it's one of those things that my mom and I still kind of reference to this day about losing your shit.
My overall take on Joel Schumacher is that he did what he wanted to do, and I respect that.
Yeah.
I'm going to stick to the Lost Boys being his big
I truly adore winner. That movie. Yeah. Like, I just love that movie. And, like, that's in the back to school category for me, where I'm like, I cannot be objective about this
right.
film.
Like, exactly. It's like, it's wonderful. It's great. Tens all around.
Yes.
Can we agree on Phone Booth? I thought Phone Booth
I
was
liked
a lot
it.
Of fun.
I liked it
a lot. And I also think it's a good example of something that came out of development hell better for it. Like, at one point, Will Smith was going to be the guy in the phone booth.
At one point,
Jim Carrey was going to be the guy in the phone booth. It was a script on the blacklist for a really long time.
Wow.
I really like the preface in that movie. It's kind of cheesy, but when they're like, this is the last phone booth in the city of New York.
I might watch that tonight.
We should acknowledge Say No Most Fire. I have not seen it. But
I don't think I've ever seen it. But it's
supposed to be good.
And Carl also, Kurlander isn't Man in Motion on our list of answers to the number one song in America? Or am I making that up?
No, I think that's a number one song. And Robin, please share friend of the podcast, Abby Fudor's theory about that song, because it's entirely accurate.
So Abby Fudor's theory is that song, if you listen to it, has nothing to do with the plot of St. Elmo's Fire. I don't think I've ever seen St. Elmo's Fire, so I'm not sure if that's true, but I'll take Abby's word for it. So her theory is that you can put the title of any movie that has the right syllables into that song. So it's like, gonna be a man in motion, Weekend at Bernie's.
Right.
And I have to apologize to all of our listeners that you just had to listen to me sing. I'm not good at singing, but that joke is worth me doing it anyway.
Totally. That was beautiful.
This came up early in the podcast because it was when we were like, oh, Jagged Edge.
Yes.
It just works.
So anyway, the Magnificent Seven.
Right. So the Magnificent Seven.
Am I right?
From 2016. If you did not see this at the time, don't worry, because Camila is going to recap it for you. Right. Here's Camila with this week's 60-second recap, and go.
It's Ocean's 11 in the Wild West. Seven magnificent men, each with a particular set of skills, join forces to help the people of Rose Creek get their home back from industrialist Bartholomew Bogue. Bart comes to town, burns down a church, kills some folks, and takes the land so he can mine for gold. Matt Bomer's widow hires Denzel, a warrant officer, to get the town back. He gathers up Chris Pratt, the magician, Vasquez, the handsome wanted man, Billy, the badass, Ethan Hawke, the has-been sharpshooter, Vincent D'Onofrio, the wild card, and Red Harvest, the real sharpshooter Native American, who I'm not sure why he even agreed to help. Being with different walks of life, differences from being squashed, blah, 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 are made. They roll to Rose Creek, take out Bart's first crew of dudes, send a message to Bart. While they wait for Bart to retaliate, they train the townspeople how to fight. Bart arrives, and it's like the Battle of the Bastards as he sends in wave after wave of army to kill the moving, anything moving. Obviously, not all seven men are magnificent enough to make it, so it comes to a showdown between Bart and Denzel, and plot twist, this shit was personal for Denzel. Years ago, Bart took Denzel's town, killed his family. Denzel almost gets got, but the widow saves his ass. There may have been a sunset for him to ride into.
Well done.
Yeah, it's close, but we're gonna count it. It was 62 seconds.
I feel like I laughed and interrupted a couple of times.
Yeah, that counts as a near win.
The cowboy over mining for gold.
The cowboy accent was last minute decision, and I almost didn't commit to it fully.
I couldn't tell you, was there a sunset? I don't know. Frankly, if you had just recapped it and said that Denzel died at the end, I'd be like, oh yeah, I guess he did. I thought this movie was boring.
Really?
Yes. Okay, so I'm excited. I hope that you have a different opinion, because while I was watching this, I kept being like, I should like this. I feel like I should be enjoying this. I am bored as hell. Am I just depressed, or is this boring?
I hate to laugh at your depression, but
it's okay. I'm a comedian. That's all. Yeah,
because I thought for sure I would be bored as hell going into it, because, like I said, I'm not really, westerns aren't usually my thing. But I gotta say, I think the epic enjoyment that I got was mostly from Vincent D'Onofrio's character.
He's fantastic.
And Billy, that fucking badass dude, was amazeballs. He has, that actor has a new fan.
He is smoking hot.
Yes, he is.
Just stupidly hot. And it's almost a shame that, like, his hotness outshone the hotness of all the other good-looking men in this movie.
Absolutely.
Yes. And his character is really cool.
Byung-Hun Lee is, which I always forget too, so I looked it up very quickly.
Thank you.
Plays Billy Rocks, you know, and
what else is he in? I did not recognize him.
It's like he was a Korean film star.
Like he is a he is a gigantic Korean film star and a secondary American film star. He did one of the Terminators and he did Red 2 and one of the G.I. Joes and just kind of rose to he gets parts in American action movies, but most of his work is in Korea.
I do have to say, I like this thing where they try to get international box office by putting in the film stars of other countries. Because I like seeing who these people are. And
otherwise, I may not have known who this man was.
Exactly. Especially when they're this good looking.
And I am immediately I forgot to do it, but my plan was to go onto Instagram and see if he has an IG.
Good plan. Good plan. His character and Ethan Hawke's character, are they in love?
I don't think so. That's not really what I was getting.
Okay.
No, I know that Billy said that Ethan helps him navigate the white man's world.
And... yes. Like they explain pretty clearly, here's our mutually beneficial relationship. But also Ethan Hawke's he goes where I go. I will protect him like he is my lover.
Or maybe Ethan was in love with him, but it wasn't reciprocated.
They weren't an item.
Right.
But Ethan was maybe in love with him.
I got a father son vibe. I got a father son, maybe I'm atoning for the fact that I killed hundreds of people for the Confederacy by being nice to this non-white youth.
Yeah, I don't know. I have really mixed feelings about Ethan Hawke's white guilt arc.
His so-called
PTSD. I guess
PTSD.
Not mixed feelings. I guess it just didn't work for me, period. I want to like Ethan Hawke in everything. Mm. So. And especially because his character's name is Goodnight Roadshow.
Right.
Right.
Which, come on.
How do we waste such an awesome name? And it's just and he has this, he's got this reputation. Everyone's like, oh, not Goodnight. Oh, sorry, Goodnight. I didn't mean to disrespect you. And he doesn't do anything. He's suffering he's washed up and he's got his PTSD.
And it's I understand with 7 characters, it can be hard to make all of them have their have a fully fleshed, existence and role in the film. But it felt like they had a pretty low batting average here.
Mm. And I would have reduced it. I mean, yes, it would be nice if the titular 7 all had, something, a role to play. But I probably would have trimmed it under 2 hours by just losing the Goodnight can't shoot for a while subplot.
Yeah.
And losing Emma's little friend who's relevant for a couple of minutes in the middle.
Oh, yeah. Her associate
just make Emma be one of the 7. We're watching it. Colin said, he was I feel like there's more than 7 of them. And I was either one of them's about to die or the girl doesn't count. And of course, the girl doesn't count.
Exactly. Even though she's I'll take his place and da, da, da. And then, and then lo and behold, she's the one who saves Denzel.
She saves Denzel. So just make her one of the 7.
Right.
I also have not forgiven Ethan Hawke for not going over the top with a Cajun accent. I was waiting for it. And then he started talking 95% his normal voice. And it's I know it isn't the future and you haven't seen Daniel Craig in Knives Out yet, but that's what we needed. Needed a ridiculous drawl. Let's get to facts, and then I'll talk about how I oddly love this movie now. But the Factsy segment. Magnificent Seven was released September 23rd of 2016. It was the 22nd number one film of the year, winning that weekend with $34.7 million. Another debuting film, the animated film Storks. guarantee that you forgot about that until I said this, if you ever even knew about it in the first place. Came in second with 21.3 million. Magnificent Seven was definitely a 1 week only number one movie in America. It fell to third in its second weekend behind the debuting Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children and the debuting Deepwater Horizon, a pretty big drop to it. Only made $15.6 million in its sophomore frame. It was not a particularly big hit. It spent 4 weekends in the top 10, a total of $93.4 million, the 32nd highest grossing film of the year. It did not do that well overseas either. It probably lost a little bit of money with a $90 million budget. Its poor showing overseas stands in stark contrast to the original film. The first Magnificent Seven was released in 1960. As we've discussed, we don't really know what the box office was then. Anecdotally, and by anecdotally I mean Wikipedia, the original Magnificent Seven was a mild box office disappointment in the US, but a giant hit in Europe. It is to this day one of the top 100 films of all time in both the United Kingdom and France. In Russia, Yul Brynner was born in Russia. Even today, The Magnificent Seven from 1960 is the top grossing American film of all time in Russia and the former Soviet Union. The original was itself a remake, of course, of Akira Kurosawa's Seven Samurai, which that is a masterpiece. It is a slog to get through. Has anyone watched Seven Samurai?
I watched it in high school. I did a paper on Akira Kurosawa, and so I watched a bunch of all the movies that they had of his at Blockbuster Video, because that's how things were back then. And I remember really, really liking it.
It's great. It's just 3.5 hours long.
Holy crap, weasels.
I probably watched it in pieces.
I saw it at Row House, like, with an intermission, and it's one of those times where it's like, I definitely fell asleep for a while in the middle. Not because it was bad, because it was because I had to sit there. It's still for 4 hours.
I am really genuinely unsure if I've ever seen the 1960 Magnificent Seven. Like, I feel like I've only sort of absorbed it through pop culture osmosis.
It's like this, but a little better. Like, it's okay. Like, the characters are different, but a lot of the scenes repeat, and, you know, the plot is virtually identical. So what was I saying about Seven Samurai? Again, there's definitely no way to know anything concrete about the box office in Japan in 1954, but again, from Wikipedia, it says that Godzilla came out the same year and Seven Samurai made more than Godzilla.
No.
Japan. Yes.
That can't be true.
Like, I know they're into it. I think we were more into Godzilla. They were like, oh, you know, it's like The Purge to them. And we were like, oh, isn't this different? Anyway, we brought this up during the first number one movie in America trivia night. I want to start dropping into the factsy segment, the reasons why movies got the ratings they did, because this is the best wellspring of meaningless English phrases I've ever seen. So The Magnificent Seven remake was rated PG-13 for extended and intense sequences of Western violence, historical smoking.
That's
the winner. That's like one of those long pipes that curves a little in the middle. Historical smoking, some language and suggestive material. And off of that,
I thought this was R-rated.
The tail segment I want to set up here. Is that bullshit? Usually going down from R, like, why is this movie rated R? But this is one of those cases where I'm like, I think PG-13 was mild for this.
Yeah, it's very violent.
It's very violent, and it's that weird ratings thing where if there isn't, like, a lot of red blood, they don't count it as R, but, like, people just keep getting shot in the heart at point-blank range.
Also, the Gatling gun part, where it's just, like, people being mowed down, and, like, particularly in America, where we have mass shootings, even during a pandemic,
right.
That was very... I don't want to say triggering, but alarming and like viscerally upsetting to me. So I definitely assumed this was R-rated.
So one for one on the MPAA is bullshit. I'm going to start writing that down. How often? One for one MPAA. Our third in memoriam of the episode. This is the final film for composer James Horner, who won 2 Oscars, both for the Titanic score and for My Heart Will Go On, and was nominated all the time, was also nominated for Aliens, Field of Dreams, Apollo 13, Braveheart, A Beautiful Mind, House of Sand and Fog, Avatar, and Somewhere Out There, the theme from An American Tale. Aww. James Horner was prolific, did more than 100 film scores, and delivered this one in 2015. It was already done, but was one of those hobbyist pilots and died in a single person plane crash.
Oh my God.
In 2015. And to bring it back up from that depression, on IMDb trivia, the first item is, Chris Pratt's horse was also in War Horse. So there you go.
Hard working
horse actor.
I think that they could have used the original theme tune more generously. Every now and then you sort of heard it. You know what I mean? It would be like, oh, I get it. They're playing the drums in the rhythm of the original theme tune. But I wanted it to come back.
To pay off the reaction I teased, I ended up really liking this. If you listen last week, I was like, I think I liked it. And I sat down, not dreading it, but just kind of like, eh, whatever, I'm watching this again. And by an hour in, I was like confused with how much I was enjoying myself.
Same.
And at that, I went to my reviews, the reviews I wrote at the time, and it was like, 9 out of 10, this is one of the best movies of the year. Like, wow. I took it down a little bit as I went. Like, when I saw it, I was like, this is maybe going to make my top 10. Wow. It didn't end. Like, I reduced it a little bit because it didn't stick with me. And I don't think this is a movie that sticks with you. But I just like everything. Like, everyone in the cast is good and it's really well directed and always looks and sounds great. I had nothing not to like.
Yeah, same. Like, I liked how the introduction happened rather quickly. We didn't get too deep into everybody's introduction and to like what their speciality was and all that stuff. Again, Vincent D'Onofrio, before he even showed up, I'm like, if this dude doesn't come out, he's like not missing teeth. Like, this is what I'm waiting for. Whenever Vincent D'Onofrio shows up, is like the craziest, kookiest possible version of the character that he can possibly play. Did not disappoint. I thought it was well directed, like the battle scene, the final showdown and everything. Because a lot of times, I was watching Troy, I think, or one of those fucking movies, and it was just like a mess. Their battle scene was directed terribly. And so when I see a good one, it's like, oh my God, this is amazing. And it was like kin to the Battle of the Bastards in Game of Thrones. The acting was great. I even enjoyed Chris Pratt. Like, he was fun. He wasn't too jokey, but the jokes that he did land, they were welcome. So I was surprised at how much I liked this movie, because I thought for sure I would have been asleep, but I found myself like pausing and waiting, like coming back and like, oh my God, okay, now we can go ahead, we can get started again. So I'm like rooting for characters and I was invested. And even Peter Sarsgaard, he was a delightful villain.
I really liked him in this. I mean, I agree with you. The fact that Chris Pratt is more likable than hateable in this movie is notable.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. And like when I think about each of the individual characters, I'm like, yeah, I liked how they did that. Like, but then and you're right about the action direction, but it all just kind of came together into a meh for me. So maybe I just got to tell my psychiatrist next week at my appointment.
Like, listen, I was watching Magnificent Seven and I felt nothing.
Up my Prozac.
I think that Chris Pratt, it's odd because, again, and when I looked at the reviews, I was praising Chris Pratt. I think that he was not like completely oversaturated yet. Jurassic World had happened, but he was not. We weren't sick of him yet. But
we're sick of him now,
right? Exactly.
But yeah, that doesn't explain now. Like I do think he was a little out of his depth. Like, he was the one where I was like, "You're not in the old west. You're a now person.
That's right. A spray on tan."
Except for when he was like doing amateur magic tricks to get out of problems, and then I was like, okay, yeah, this is you now. It's you.
Right. I was excited that he was the one that kind of saved the day, and the way that he went about doing it, the way that he did it, is like, okay, I kind of saw that coming. But again, Well played, sir. Well done.
That was one thing where it was like about halfway through, I was like, oh yeah, the way this story ends is with most of them dying. Right. Like, I was like, oh, right. I forgot that that's how this goes. I definitely was like, so Chris Pratt's definitely going to have some kind of heroic sacrifice, but like, it's the cool kind of heroic sacrifice. Right. Like, I definitely dug it, dug that scene. The amateur magic stuff, it is so... You know, I still, going back and watching Parks and Rec, think that Andy's funny on Parks and Rec. Mm. So, like, I think that Chris Pratt is at his most likable when he's kind of an idiot. And so, like the Lego movie, or to a lesser extent, the Guardians of the Galaxy, the amateur magic is when he sort of seemed like an idiot.
Right.
It's Jurassic World where he's like, I'm the cool guy that...
Yeah,
it just becomes,
yeah, it's like, oh, that's icky. Stop it.
Yes.
I do want to point out that there were, what, three of the seven ended up making it. And I think they were all the three men of color.
I thought Billy died.
Did not. Billy and Goodnight died.
Right, right.
People.
So like three of the four men of color. But still, it was okay, like, so Denzel, Vasquez, and I forget who the other one was. But I would just
Red Harvest.
Yes, that's right. So shout out to that. That, you know,
yeah, that's awesome.
That's a big deal, a big win for us.
I don't want to get ahead of ourselves with the bingo card, but when I saw the whitewashing square review the bingo card, I like literally was like, ha, evaded it this time. The rare, not very whitewashed Western.
Exactly.
To go back, since Red Harvest came up, and he probably won't come up again because he basically is just there to fire arrows, but you mentioned him in the recap. I don't know why he cares, why he's here, why the, and I was think
it is, you know what, I really respect this Denzel guy.
Right. Denzel, like, did some Denzel talking to him.
Right. Imagine if Denzel Washington showed up in your life, spoke your language, which no one else speaks, right, like a little bit,
right,
and is like, hey, please help me out, and you didn't have something better to do.
That's true.
You would help him.
I know, because I was confused, like, I don't understand why he cares so much. Like, he'd get a little something, like his tribe thinks that their life wasn't for him. He's got a different path. Cool. So he's off.
That was weird.
So he's off, like, doing his different path, but I don't recall Denzel offering him any money or anything.
No, nope. Really. Didn't buy a horse for him. The elders told me to leave the tribe. What?
Huh? I want to hear that story. I want to know.
Underexplored backstory.
But then why did the six just go like, yeah, he's cool? Like, they were ready to shoot him because they don't trust Indians, and then Denzel was like, he's with us. I mean, again, probably because it's Denzel.
Because Denzel said, he's with us. And they're like, all right, man.
Didn't he manage some really awesome shot with an arrow or something? And then they were like, oh, we want this skill on our team.
No, he just ate a raw deer liver. Right.
Oh, yeah. Oh, gross.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Slightly underwritten. Vincent D'Onofrio is still the MVP.
Absolutely.
He has been working his whole life to play a hulking, fur-wearing, squeaky-voiced settler. Like,
when he comes in and they're like, I think that bear was wearing a man suit.
I had to rewind because I laughed so hard. I felt like I missed something important.
And then he casually saunters into the showdown, still snacking. Like, the rest of them have their hands on their holsters, and he just kind of wanders down the alley, like, chewing on jerky, maybe? Right. Oh, it's so good.
Dan and I's theory was that those were any leftover of Bartholomew's dudes that he had made jerky out of them. That's what was happening.
That's gross and wonderful.
But yeah, like the squeaky voice thing, he's like, they stole my, it's man's right by law and God to get his belongings. I'm like, yes, thank you, Vinny. Thank you.
Good imitation.
And then when he starts murdering people really hard, he's yelling Bible verses. It's,
yes.
It's so good.
Like, listen, I would just watch a cut of every Vincent D'Onofrio character that he's ever played. Just, you know, not even in context of what's happening. Like, the one that always sticks in my head is, did you ever see The Salton Sea?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. He plays, like, this drug dealer who is, like, done so much fucking coke in his life that it's eaten his nose away. So he has to wear he has no nose cartilage. So he wears, like, a plastic nose. And he's got a squeak. like every time he talks, there's like a blow in his nose, and it's amazing. It's amazing. Like, I don't think people give this man enough credit in the world.
I agree. Also, team bipolar.
He's bipolar.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming that's probably why he quit Law and Order CI. I know he was like, it was working on his psyche. It was like wearing him down mentally.
Yes. That is what happened. Also, it's like why his weight fluctuates and why he is very good at playing people who are a bit off.
Got it. Well, I gotta say, like, I've been a big, big fan of his forever. And when he joined Twitter, it was amazing to me.
I just rewatched Adventures in Babysitting.
Oh my
and
God!
I forgot that he plays Thor at the end. Right. And, like, as soon as he popped up, I was like, oh, right. Yes!
Baby Vinny!
Briefly, just an aside on Haley Bennett. Yeah,
what's her deal? Who is that?
Justice for Emma, like, yes, she should have been one of the seven, and she was fine in this. I had already written starring Jennifer Lawrish in my notes before I went back and looked her up again and realized that she's also the we couldn't get Jennifer Lawrence in Girl on the Train, where that preview I watched three times thinking I was looking at Jennifer Lawrence and Jennifer Lawrence was in this movie before I realized it was her. I think she looks a lot like Jennifer Lawrence. She kind of acts like Jennifer Lawrence, and she's not good enough to overcome that. Like, she's fine, but right. If you're fine and just really similar to somebody else, then
it doesn't make for a very flourishing acting career.
She's done things. She's got a lot of work,
but still, like, you're right. Also, she's not going to reach that J-Law.
What's her name again? Haley Bennett?
Yes.
That's such a generic young white lady name.
Yes.
It's like, that's all I say. I just see blonde and just rushed out.
Not like Jennifer Lawrence isn't exactly the same thing.
Right. Jenny. But yeah.
Where's she been? Did she go? Did she peace out for
a
while?
She had a baby.
Did she?
I think so.
I was going to say she's just counting her Hunger Games money. Like, I don't think she has to do anything for a hot second. She's going to be all right.
I mean, I used to say Jennifer Lawrence is going to win more Oscars than Meryl Streep because, like, she won one and was, like, within a breath of two others by the time she was, what, 24? Like, that could still happen, between, like, Hunger Games money and X-Men money and, like, being, you know, at the uncomfortable, like, height of popularity at a tender age, like, she also might just be like, yeah, I'm good.
Right. Because I could see, like, from what I gather, what she's like as a person, like, I would imagine that at some point you got to be like, all right, I just need to take a step back because Hollywood is killing me. Like, I can't even do it within this public realm much longer.
Also, I think I lied. I don't think she had a baby. So your theory is correct. Counting her money, or who knows, maybe something else is going on. But honestly, take that break.
Seriously.
Are we forgetting, like, a really prominent Jennifer Lawrence role in the recent past that I'm... No, like, she was in Dark Phoenix for all of, you know, 4 minutes last year, and then...
Mother!
To her intense embarrassment, I'm sure.
Yeah, and then Red Sparrow the year before, and Mother the year before that.
I guess Joy was... I never saw it, but I guess Joy was supposed to be a big deal in Passengers, and American Hustle, I did enjoy her in that.
I really like Joy. Yeah. I really... Like, it's one of those movies that seems like it should be bad, and yet is good.
Well, I needed to take a break from Jennifer Lawrence, because I was sick of her for a hot second, so maybe, she needed to take a break. She needs a break. Like, thanks, Jay.
She really was everywhere for a minute. And also, like, kind of leaned in a little bit too. Like, you know, I hate this kind of judgment, especially that goes to female celebrities, but it leaned in a little bit to, like, I'm just a cool girl.
Right, right.
I love eating food. Yeah, like, so do we.
Right. Thanks. Celebrities just like us.
Exactly.
The funniest thing that Chris Pratt ever said, and it's terrible, but a really good line. There was some... They were doing the promotion for Passengers and roasting each other on one of the late night shows. And he said, the only thing weaker than your acting is your iCloud password. And it's like, oh, that's a good line.
That is good.
I saw a Hunger Games thing where her and the PETA kid were like playing a match game kind of game. She won and said, like, oh, this is awesome. I never win anything. And he said, you won an Oscar.
I do have a quick question about the end of this film. Was I correct in that Denzel, when the plot twist is revealed, and he said that Barth strung him up as a little boy? So we're supposed to believe that Denzel is younger than Peter Sarsgaard?
What? I chose to miss that, I think, because that doesn't sound right.
I mean, it didn't hit me till today when I started to really think about it. But he's like, well, he's choking him out. He starts to go on and say, you know, pray to my mama, pray to my sister. After you came to town and, you know, you took them and then killed them. And then you strung me up. And then he like pulls down his collar and you see like this rope mark burn around his neck as a boy, I think is what he said. But yeah, so I guess I need to go back for clarification.
Yeah, Denzel Washington, born 1954. Peter Sarsgaard, born 1971.
Right, yeah. It's like, I knew for a damn fact that Peter
Sarsgaard... I had this moment of, is Peter Sarsgaard secretly old?
He's like, you're like, born in 55. What?
Right, exactly. Like, it could be, you know? Right. Like, he's not... young.
He was great. He got this role. I was watching his speech about how democracy is capitalism and capitalism is God, and in 2020 was just going, ooh. Yeah, about that. Good job predicting this one, screenwriters. Right. And we haven't really mentioned Pittsburgh's own Antoine Fuqua.
What?
I mean, this has to be some of his best directing. Like, yeah, he's always good. But like, when you compare this to the Equalizer movies or some of the other, you know, more straight up action flicks he's made, you know, it, and the cinematographer is doing a lot of this work, but everything in this is really well put together. And there's so many like little shots of, you know, a face in the darkness and, you know, the way that these characters are moving around one another that are just really... I like this movie a lot.
One thing I have to say that I enjoyed is, and I've seen this a bunch, in like Camila, Westerns, not really my jam, but I do like how directors who make a Western always have this little bit of like fanboy glee escape. You know, it's like when they went to film school, they had to watch a bunch of Westerns, or, you know, just growing up as movie lovers, if they didn't go to film school. I have no idea what Antoine Fuqua's history is there, but it's like, I'm doing it. I'm making one. I'm making a Western.
It's like, finally.
Can I put a tumbleweed somewhere? I want to put a tumbleweed somewhere.
There has to be two guns. Somebody shooting off two guns in the air. Yeah.
So wait, that is wait. Fun for me.
Can we throw that guy through the window? Is it the kind of window that breaks? If we throw him really hard, will it break anyway?
Oh, speaking of windows, did you notice that the saloon was called the Elysium? And that struck me because I was like, I thought Elysium was just a made up word. Like, I didn't think it meant anything. I just thought
it comes from myth.
Yeah, it's something about the happiest place on earth, or like the state of perfect happiness is what I found out. Which totally makes sense for a whorehouse. Like, I get it. The irony that movie sucks so badly.
This is way better than Elysium. Oh, just to be absolutely. Clear. Not nearly as boring.
Yeah. Let's rate Magnificent Seven. I started at a number, then I added 3. For shooting a guy straight into a coffin. Then I subtracted 2 because during the first half of the climax, I legitimately didn't know if several main characters had died or not. And that was annoying. But I landed on 81. It's an 81.
Wow. Nice.
Robin?
40.
Whoa!
Wow. Okay. Holy cat weasels.
Yeah.
Okay.
Over the course of the episode, I kept feeling like you guys were talking me up and that maybe but I can't. I was bored most of the movie.
That's fine.
Yeah.
I thought it was appropriate that I ended up watching it on Father's Day because it seems like a Father's Day type movie.
Yes, it's such a dad movie.
Right? And I was also confused as to why Matt Bomer was even there if he was killed off in the first 5 minutes. But regardless, I gave it an 80.
I actually was like, oh, he's about to die. He's not a movie star. He's a TV star. There's no way that he's going to be one of the 7, and they're spending too much time on him if he isn't.
Right. And Ryan Murphy's not involved in this, so there's no reason for him to be on screen much longer.
Also, a man getting put in a refrigerator. kind of nice.
I miss
like
that.
The women in refrigerators trope, yes, but yes. For a man, the female character.
Oh,
the
one is what we're saying. Gotcha. Yes.
Motivated by vengeance.
Yeah.
Well, this is Robin's biggest bring down the average episode ever.
Damn it, woman.
So it still ends up at a respectable 67. Okay. I'm just looking at Robin's scores. Just if Robin likes this a little more than Glass and a little less than Stigmata.
That's 1000% accurate. Yeah.
So wait, our ratings differ. Okay, we're not there
it's
yet.
It's more than 30.
We're not there yet.
It's 67, and 67 is the final score. And I don't know why we keep landing on that. Like. Not to be like numbers are weird, guys, but because there's three of us, the vast majority of these are like a fractional point off from one another.
That's weird.
And yet there are three movies that we've given a 67 to. Teachers, Back to School, and The Magnificent Seven.
Wow.
Yeah. So kind of middle of the pack, but two out of three hosts recommend that you go back to The Magnificent Seven. Speaking of the bingo card, it did it. After two full bingo cards, we finally have a movie where our ratings differ more than 30. Yay! Thank you, Robin.
You're welcome. Thank you to my depression.
Black director.
Black director, certainly. Remake.
Yay!
Oh, we're all over the board. Remake, black director, ratings differ more than 30. None of that was a coffee shop, unfortunately. Yeah, I'd have a bingo if it was. All no. takes place in one state.
No computer hackers.
There's no. They are definitely no computer hackers or planes.
If there's computer hackers, I get a bingo. So
right, that yeah. I would have gotten a bingo on computer hackers.
So we're all close.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's because it's 2 weeks in a row with three squares. So we're getting there, and maybe next week. It's time for You Can't Handle the Truth. Who saw a thing, and do they want to talk about it?
I watched two movies.
I had a slow week, so Camila it is.
I watched five De Bloods, and it could have been shorter. There were definitely Spike Lee tropes in there that I was expecting, but I enjoyed it. Enough, mostly because Delroy Lindo is fucking amazing.
So good.
And,
so good.
Yeah, and I forget that Isaiah something is the actor, but he's like always, anytime he shows up, he says, she. And if he hadn't
Colin
said
and I had this like whole long thing where he was like, that's the guy who says she. And I was like, isn't that Wendell Pierce? And we went back and forth about it forever. And Colin is, of course, right. And that is a rare situation where Colin is right about who someone is and I'm not.
So I felt like I should have been playing bingo whilst watching this movie because like I'm waiting for him to say that and he did. I was waiting for like the floating dolly shot. I was waiting for the you know the breaking the fourth wall monologue to the audience when the character breaks down. I thought it was an interesting choice to not get younger actors to play them in the flashbacks. And I know and I guess a lot of people were like kind of pissed off about that or they were confused by the whole thing, but
it worked for me.
Yeah, the way I saw it was like if Delroy Lindo were your grandpa or whatever and he was telling you these stories, you wouldn't imagine him as younger. You'd be imagining him as, you know, what he is now. So, I mean, it didn't really pull me out of anything or throw me off.
It's interesting that you say that because I had a completely different, like, resonant interpretation where I was like, this is because of that trope where no one ever really leaves the Ooh. War. So they've aged, but they're still there.
Interesting.
And then I'll talk more about it. But I was on a Critics' Choice Association like Zoom junket,
right?
with some of the cast and with Spike Lee and it, you know, someone asked this directly, and he said, one, I don't like it when there's younger actors playing your main characters. I don't think it usually works. I think it's jarring. Two, Netflix wouldn't give me Irishman money to de-age them. So like,
and which is kind of bullshit,
right?
Yeah,
it's Spike fucking Lee. Like, come on,
right?
Like, it's not like some no-name dude, this first-time director.
I wrote a thing about it. You can find on my Twitter and stuff. That was mainly about Spike Lee talking about the Black Lives Matter scene in the end of The Five Bloods. I texted my co-host as this was happening because it was so beautiful. It was one of those Zooms where it's like it's not everybody because you're just watching. And so it's doing the cut between the speaker thing.
Mm-hmm.
And no matter who was talking, Delroy Lindo would hear something and thoughtfully go, and the Zoom would cut to him just with his hands folded calmly. reacting and nodding at yes. at the thoughtful thing that someone else just said, and it was great every
acting
time.
Acting is reacting.
Right. Like, this performance is brilliant.
That's awesome.
We also commented on how Spike Lee has a beautiful tableau for his zoo, right. and Camilla speculated.
And he paid somebody to do that. Like, he's good. Yeah. And so now that's my new business. I'm going to
right. I need one of those.
Decorate everybody's backgrounds for their Zoom.
He's in front of all of this artwork he's collected at a dramatic angle, and he's not in the middle. He's leaning down in a corner of the frame. It's like, oh, the director made this visually interesting. Surprise.
All right. And the other thing I saw was You Should Have Left with Kevin Bacon.
Oh, do they acknowledge the ridiculous age difference?
Yes, they do. A lot.
Okay. So, do they deal with it in a positive? Like, do they make it make sense?
I mean, there's no real explanation about it, but they have a little girl, and one of her things is like, you know, Daddy, since you're so old, since you're so much older than Mommy, are you going to die first? So it's stuff like that that kind of goes through.
Yes. Yes, I am.
How was it?
It was all right. It's not what I was really expecting. I didn't hate it, but... You know, I mean, it was one of, there was a moment where, you know, they're trying to leave the house, Kevin Bacon and his daughter, and he can't get the door open. He's like, oh, no, oh, no. And the little girl's like, why don't you just unlock the door? And he unlocks it and it opens.
No, that's tough.
This sounds a lot like not worth $20.
No, absolutely yeah. not. But again, I always, when I do this, when I, you know, when, since we've been doing this, I've been like, you know, well, if it were, I would have gone to the theater to see this. It would have been about $20 for Dan and I to go see this movie. So like probably more. So yeah, it's fine. Whatever.
My general take on that movie, having not seen it in just the trailer, is aside from the age difference, I'm like, if you are putting in, hey, go get a tape measurer in your trailer, it's probably kind of a slow movie.
Yeah, totally. It is.
You kind of hinted at it. I want to have a brief conversation, as much to sort out my own feelings as to provide entertaining content for the listener. is anyone going to go to a movie theater anytime soon?
No.
I am not.
No. You know, I intend to go to a drive-in, but like being inside that. An actual theater, I don't really see myself doing that until there's a vaccine.
Right. And that's saying a lot for me, too, because like going to movie theater, yeah, for us in general, just because, you know, like that was my sanctuary. You know, you go there, mm-hmm. you tune out for 2 hours. And even after like the several mass shootings that had happened in other states at movie theaters, I was
that
already
never scared
on edge.
Me.
Well, I was still like, I went, but I was still like on edge. Like I'm keeping my eye out yeah. on my periphery and all that and making sure. But still, but this, like, you can't see the threat. So, I mean, I'm not. I just don't see me going and not even to mention Comic-Cons.
My thing, like everybody's got their thing that they do when it's like, I need me time or I need to reset. You know what I mean? And it's like mine is makeup and the movies.
Right.
And, I still have makeup. Thank God. But no one ever sees it.
I think your eyeshadow is on point and popping today.
Thank you. It's from the Naked Honey palette.
All three of us do that at least once a week, if not more. And it's weird because I would love to be in a movie theater right now. I'm not even close to doing it. And I bring it up now because like there's the big test is coming soon where probably within the next 3 weeks, either they're going to forge ahead and reopen the chains and try to release Mulan. Or they're going to not do that and delay the movies again. I think it's going towards the second one, particularly like no one in gigantic markets, Florida, California, and Texas are going to go. So, right. you know, why would they release anything? But a lot of the smaller theaters are reopening. Like I could go to a movie right now. Acknowledging that I'm not a doctor, my understanding of COVID-19 might be limited. As far as I can tell, like the one guideline is don't be in a room breathing for an hour plus.
Right.
That it is really unfortunate that puts both movies and other things that we love low on the list of reasonable choices. But I miss it every day, but I don't need it that bad.
Exactly.
It's not forever. I think that a lot of my behavior regarding the pandemic, if they were like, guess what? For whatever reason, we can never vaccinate against this, then I would have a very different risk profile where I'd be like, well, I'm going to live my life, but I'm super cool with pausing my life for 6 to 24 months.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I'm like, great. Done it before. We'll do it again.
Right.
And the drive-in is great. Like, I'm up to like twice a week now. Oh, it, wow. It's last week I was like, we're finally going to do a double feature. And then the first movie ended and we went, it's late. We're going home.
You still haven't seen American Graffiti.
Still haven't seen American Graffiti. Okay. No. And even then, like the minor risk when I like wear my mask and walk into the concession hut and grab some things, it's like, I was in there for 10 minutes and I'm wearing a mask. This is a much more reasonable. And it reminded me that like, this is just such a beautiful way to spend time, is to be in your comfortable car out under the stars, probably somewhere at least fairly scenic. Two of the ones, right, dependable near us is not like a beauty of a location, but the other two I've been to, Brownsville and Riverside, really are. It's a great way to spend the evening. So like, I have that. I'm going to be fine.
Yeah. That's great. It sucks, but you know, it is what it is, and I cannot afford to take any risks just to go see. Mm-hmm.
That's the thing. So because I'm young and healthy-ish, youngish and healthy-ish, like I'm less concerned about like me getting in and dying. I'm more concerned about the guilt of being a vector of infection. And if I become a vector of infection because, for example, I watched my friend try on wedding dresses this weekend, I feel way more okay with that choice than I became a vector of infection because I went to see Mulan.
Right.
Right.
Like, I want to see Mulan, but it'll be on Disney Plus eventually.
Right.
I think everything's going to, I mean, there's been a couple of things even the past few weeks that have been like, nope, never mind streaming. The Tom Hanks movie that has a weird title, Greyhound.
How ironic would it be if Tom Hanks, our coronavirus canary.
Right. I was kind of thrown off. I saw the trailer for that or something and I was like, oh, really? I was like, okay, well, okay. And then it's like, oh, was it filmed in Australia? Is that what was happening?
That's what was happening.
Mm-hmm. Those are going to streaming. It makes me sad. And I know that there's some movie theaters that I love that probably aren't coming back for this exact reason, but not yet.
I just want them to get with the program. Just go ahead and put Candyman on streaming. Be done with it. Like, stop fucking around. I'm not.
Yeah. I think honestly, Mulan is my, as much as it's like, it's kind of shitty that it's like, you know, this woman of color led action movie. Mm. I want it to be a big hit.
Right.
Seems like the kind of movie that would really rock on Disney Plus, and let's just watch it.
Tenet, I get.
Fuck that noise.
Wait, Nolan, what? Look at the trailer. It looks mysterious and compelling.
Okay. It'll be mysterious. And what was your second adjective?
Compelling.
It'll be mysterious and compelling in my house. My TV. Yeah.
No, I'm not saying I'm going. I'm saying delay it till 2022 I can see it in the theater. No.
I am much more okay with that.
Or we just go ahead and fucking release everything on streaming like where they're supposed to once things get correct. Re-release it in the theater. Because, you know, like I went and saw Lost Boys again like 5 years ago on the big screen because I didn't see it back in 85 or whatever when it was it was out in theaters. So those who really want to go see it again on the big screen will go do that. You know, let's fucking stop circle jerking and just go ahead and just fucking be done with it. Just release the movies.
Having full circle back to Joel Schumacher.
And also back to movies released to streaming, one of which I watched and wanted to talk about, which is Miss Juneteenth. Which with Nicole Beharie, or however you say her last name, I really liked it. And it made me think that if I had my own movie theater, I would love to do a beauty pageant centric fest. Because I was like, wow, I like every movie about beauty pageants. I could only think of four: this and Drop Dead Gorgeous, American classic, Dumplin' from a couple years ago,
Miss Congeniality,
and Miss Congeniality. But all four of those movies are at least an 8 out of 10 for me.
Oh yeah, those are bangers. You could totally get that. That's a film fest right there. Duh.
Yeah. So Miss Juneteenth, if you kind of like that sort of movie, or if you like movies about mom feelings, highly recommend it. And if those things are not your jam, then don't watch it. It's not like a must see, but I really enjoyed it.
Where is it streaming? And
I think everywhere, but I think it's an Amazon movie. So I was able to buy it for $10 on Amazon, and I'm glad I spent the extra $3 to buy it because I will watch it again for sure.
I am here for this.
Yeah, absolutely. Very good.
I had a light week. We're going through the Nightmare on Elm Streets. You know.
Wait, is Tony in one of them? Did you get to the Tony one?
I don't think he is.
He's in one of the Friday the 13th. This came up when we were doing the should we do a Tony special week and decided we didn't want to watch Tarzan.
If you like Nightmare on Elm Street. Did I talk about the documentary Scream, comma, Queen?
I think so.
I might have tuned out like I sometimes do when you guys go in your horror movie tangents.
Keep it okay, real. Okay. That's fair.
Then go ahead.
Bye.
Nightmare on Elm Street 2 is an interesting one. It's good. It's the only one where the hero is a guy rather than a final girl. Mm. And it was, you know, heavily coded as a gay metaphor, which was not made clear to the young star, Mark Patton, who was closeted at the time for the sake of his career. You could definitely fault him for not picking up on it because the movie's really gay. But, like, he was a rising star who was trying to keep his sexuality quiet because it was the mid-80s and right. that would get him typecast. And then...
Or not cast.
Or right. not cast, more likely not cast at all. And, you know, Nightmare on Elm Street 2 came out, a huge hit, an anticipated sequel. It made a lot of money, and it kind of ended his career because it effectively outed him in a way that wow. he didn't want. There's a fascinating documentary called Scream Queen, My Nightmare on Elm Street, wow. which, like everything else I recommend, is now on Shudder. But Real Q here in Pittsburgh showed it last year back-to-back with the movie itself. The movie's interesting and very, very odd, but the documentary is a great treatment of what this very distinct, unique Hollywood story was like for this guy. And he's happy now, and now he's one of those guys that, like, gleefully does every horror convention and seems to really enjoy it. So he's made peace with it, but nice. It's an interesting story.
It is interesting.
I am going yeah. to watch that.
Yeah. Like everything good, it's on Shudder. Anything else for You Can't Handle the Truth before we draw a movie?
Nope.
Robin, we keep getting calls to put all of these bullshit movies on the list, and I'm
yeah.
not.
It is interesting news.
Yeah.
I am excited that they're reporting this. I'm excited that people are pulling these shenanigans. I think you made absolutely the right choice to ignore it. Do you know when you will cease to ignore it? Is it basically when the chains open up?
When the studios are reporting. The studios are not reporting. Like, it's probably been trolls for 3 months. But, okay. like, the studios are not actually reporting what the things that are playing are making. When you go to Box Office Mojo and there's, like, data with actual studio movies, that's the week that I think
okay. it
although the speculation was they announced at the drive-in that, remember I told you a few weeks ago there was like a we think this is what the list was list of the mm-hmm, top 10 mm-hmm. Jaws was playing in so many places for its 45th anniversary that they're pretty sure that Jaws was the number one movie in America this week.
That's on our fake list, right? Our unedited list that includes the...
I have to double check. Okay. It might be on a re-release, but even our unedited list doesn't go back to 75.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know. Anyway, the number is 375. As a reminder, two vetoes remain in play, and hopefully we won't have to use them. Hopefully we will just be overjoyed to be talking about the reissue of Fiddler on the Roof in
yes!
1979.
Oh my gosh. Yes, please.
Okay.
It was the tale of two reactions where Robin practically started singing If I Were a Rich Man.
I was going to sing Miracle of Miracles, just to be clear.
And Camila just looked tired. Just looked like...
I mean, I would have vetoed it, but Robin's very excited about this. So I'll let that slide. I just let it ride.
Thank you.
What?
I'm taking this as a personal gift.
What? What was the year?
Time out. So... this is, we've talked about it before, we have some questionable data for the late 70s, early 80s, because Box Office Mojo has some things but doesn't have others. Fiddler on the Roof was re-released in November of 1979 and totally could have won the weekend it was re-released. It made almost $2 million. That was enough to win a sleepy weekend in 1979. We just don't know. So, we might do it, but here's Robin to explain our random pandemic bonus option.
I think that what we're going to do is we're going to draw another number, and if we like that movie much more than the prospect of watching potentially lie of a number one movie in America, Fiddler on the Roof, then we will have our next episode be about that. And only Robin will watch Fiddler on the Roof, and I will enjoy it, and I'll watch whatever else we draw and maybe enjoy it. So that's what we're going to do right now. So basically, this is a free veto.
And we will vote when we have the other option. Whichever gets more votes, that's what we're watching. The number is 628. That is, it's already come up this episode.
Lost Boys.
Jurassic World.
Fiddler on Barf. The Roof.
We're watching Fiddler on the Roof.
I watched Fiddler on the Roof.
Yeah, I got a vote. I like Jurassic World.
It's fine.
A big dinosaur eats another big dinosaur, but I'm more curious about Fiddler
on
the Roof.
Yeah, exactly. Like I've
seen... It is 3 hours long. Budget your time accordingly.
You said that after we voted.
Right. So
Jurassic World is 2.5 hours long.
No, I've never it's a classic of cinema. I've never seen it. Yes, let's go.
Miracle of miracles. All right, we gotta do the quick quiz. Go, go, go.
Oh, the thing with the song. The Magnificent Seven was released September 23rd, 2016. What was the number one song in America when The Magnificent Seven was lighting the box office on a mild brush fire?
This was fall of 2016?
Yes, September.
Was it Fifth Harmony?
No, not seeing Fifth Harmony as a number one that year. Mm. This was like a 12-week number one. This was a ubiquitous hit at that time.
Rihanna?
No.
Drake?
No, it is somebody featuring somebody.
Boy, a Jonas brother? Nick Jonas?
None of them are involved. I guess you would say that this is DJs featuring a pop star.
Is the pop star Justin Bieber?
No.
Okay.
While you're thinking, my clearest memory of this was someone clearly parking in front of my old house just I think to have sex and smoke weed in a car for like an hour and playing this song at a volume as if it was I was playing it inside my own home. That doesn't help you.
That doesn't help me.
No, I wasn't there.
The featured artist is Halsey.
Yeah, I'm out. I have no idea.
Chainsmokers?
What is a Halsey?
Yes.
The We Stole a Mattress song?
Yeah, probably. Closer is the name of it.
Yeah. Who steals a mattress?
The Chainsmokers featuring Halsey. Halsey is, she's talented. I like her. Has to be the least deserving person to have been her own musical guest and guest host on SNL.
Team bipolar.
Yay. And with this episode full of people who have died and sad discussions, that's the note we're ending on.
Number one movie in America.
Her name's Ashley. Isn't that terrible?